April 2nd, 2012, here with Patrick Evan. His new album, Soul Power, is available now. And the first thing I'd like to ask you, Patrick, is what is soul power? How would you define it?
Soul. That is something that comes from an expression of the past that we carry forth in our gene pool. Meaning struggle, you know, jazz, rap, you know, southern rock, particularly. You feel what I'm saying?
Absolutely. we're here in the South, so.
The home of southern rock, they say, is Jacksonville, because Lynyrd Skynyrd and mainly them, you know, so many other bands have come out of here. Like, but Lynyrd Skynyrd is like, they call Jacksonville the home of southern rock because of innovative bands like Lynyrd Skynyrd that they really put their foot into what they were doing.
Absolutely. And it's a process that continues to this day.
Right.
With the bands that are around.
Exactly.
How would you describe soul power to someone who's not heard it yet?
Old school. It was actually inspired. My parents had 9 kids, so I'm the last. Mm. I'm the 9th, right? So, which means I had my siblings were teenagers when I was born. So any good thing that they were listening to, you know, I was born in 65. So any good thing that they were listening to, I remember my sister teaching me dance routines. She was like 16. And she was teaching me dance routines to Aretha Franklin, Respect.
Mm-hmm.
And she remembers this. We still talk about this. So, you know, I had siblings that were like at least 18 when I was born. So we're talking about the Temptations. We're talking about the Supremes, you know. Into the 70s, we're talking about my brother used to be going to see Parliament when they would come to town, you know, Curtis Mayfield, Gladys Knight and the Pips, you know, Rufus and Chaka Khan. So all this stuff I was being exposed to, and that's what this new CD is about. I wanted to do a CD that was representing different sounds of things I grew up listening to.
Do you remember the first record you bought?
Now, I remember the first record I was given, which was Rufus and Chaka Khan. It was called Rags to Rufus. Tell Me Something Good. It was a song Stevie Wonder wrote specifically for Chaka Khan. And to this day, that band is my greatest influence. And Chaka Khan is my favorite singer still to date. And I must have been 9 when I got that album. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm the one you call a diehard fan. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
So soul power is representing a lot of the things that I heard growing up. Some stuff sounds like James Brown. There's some stuff that sounds like the Supremes. There's some stuff that sounds like Temptations. There's a tribute to Bob Marley, a reggae song called Child of Light.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tribute to my favorite singer, Chaka Khan. In her real name, called Yvette Marie,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
And there's some jazz songs on there inspired by Walt Disney records that my mother had brought me, like those albums where it might be like Jungle Book or something, and you know, this guy is telling a story, and you can watch the thing in your album. It's like an album book,
mm-hmm.
And then the thing goes beep, and then you turn the page, the next page. But there were some brilliant songs. I was actually listening to some really high-tech jazz and arrangements just by listening to the Walt Disney stuff. And I didn't realize that until I got grown and started, you know, doing music with real musicians. I was like, man, you know, that Walt Disney stuff, they had cats playing on that stuff. I didn't get it at the time, even though I could scat the horn parts. And
mm-hmm.
I was like, I didn't realize Schoolhouse Rock the same way. If people listen to that stuff, there's some cats playing on that stuff. You know, there's some bad cats
mm-hmm.
playing on Schoolhouse Rock.
Oh, yeah.
And those old Disney records that I had with my mom got me, you know.
Sure.
Oh, man, are you kidding?
Well, a lot of those guys are out, particularly in California. In those days, orchestras were maintained by a lot of the broadcast companies, like your NBC Orchestra, RCA Victor Orchestra, I think.
Hmm.
And so a lot of the session musicians would come and people like Quincy Jones did a lot of work out there, mm-hmm. Elvin Jones, Doc Severinsen, Louis Belson. So they were, it was very hip, you know. There's a guy named Shelley Mann who used to do the soundtrack for a show called Peter Gunn. And it was, it was pretty mm-hmm. intense. It was a very technically adept style out there. Like, those guys could play anything. So there was a fusion of stuff going on, as you well know.
No, exactly. Exactly. When was that stuff? Like, in the 50s, I guess?
Yeah, the 50s.
Disney records and all that.
50s and 60s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That stuff was awesome.
Well, they hired good songwriters. It's to their credit, all those Disney songs were, just as songs, were really well constructed.
I mean,
it's like Disney kind of took up the mantle of what had been happening in Broadway and stuff in the previous
that.
Era, like the Tin Pan Alley.
I can receive.
You know,
that.
Rodgers and Hammerstein, your Gershwins, Cole Porter, you got a lot of that stuff in Walt Disney, which is something I respect about them. Kind of how. Talk about Schoolhouse Rock and Sesame Street and things like that. It was marketed technically towards children,
right?
But they weren't afraid of presenting a really sophisticated style
Absolutely.
To the kids. Because when kids are young, when your mind is young, you're even more prepared to absorb that kind of sophisticated
Absolutely.
Material.
Absolutely. No, really, there's a song on the CD called Pink Supremacist. And which was a term, which was a phrase I heard come out of DJ Matt's mouth. You know, he is a comedian.
Yes.
So
a brilliant comedian.
But I heard him say it to a musician. He was taking a shot at a musician friend of ours. But when I heard the expression, I was like, wow, pink supremacist. I said, I can see that for women. You know, like, pink supremacist. But when I finished writing the song, I realized that it was really inspired by a song that I heard on the Disney album called Jungle Fever from when I was a kid. Like, when I listened to Pink Supremacist, and I wish I could find a copy of this song, but I could still sing it all the way down for you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
In the future.
Okay.
But no, I was just telling my roommate Overstreet that I had such a long weekend that I actually was hoarse. Like yesterday, I was trying to sing and just nothing was happening. And you know, so I had a long weekend with a bunch of good musicians, but things got loud and you know, but that's what I'm saying. You don't realize how much this stuff is inspiring you. I'm sitting writing music. And that would sound silly to me. I'm like, wow, this reminds me of the Disney's, you know, when I was a little boy. And I'm taking this seriously now, though, you know, what I'm like, that's, you know, I'm like, wow, them cats, you know, right on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's classic material.
Absolutely.
There are many artists who've covered the Disney stuff, guys like Miles Davis.
I didn't realize that.
But Someday My Prince Will Come.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
John Coltrane did Chim Chim Cheree. Chim Chimini, Chim Chimini, Chim Chim Cheree. Was that Mary Poppins?
I'm sure you're right.
Like, he would take that, he'd take that shit out to like 20 minutes, you know, just as he would do with My Favorite Things.
Yeah.
You know?
But that's because they saw the brilliance in the arrangement.
Oh, yeah.
That they would even take the time, you know?
That's right. Dave Brubeck, a very good friend of Jacksonville, did a Disney album, Dave Digs Disney.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, my favorite Disney album, for listeners out there, is Sun Ra Plays Disney, released on Enya Records in 1989. Not Enya, Leo Records, I believe, out of Germany. It was a live recording of Sun Ra's band playing a whole concert of Disney songs they did. Whistle While You Work, Someday My Prince Will Come, bunch of others. It's like an hour long. Pretty interesting, because, you know, it's Sun Ra.
Right. That's like George Clinton doing a Disney, some Disney covers, you know. No, that would be bad, though.
All of you out there he's probably done it.
Yeah, we just haven't heard it, right?
God knows if the money's right, he'll do damn near anything.
He will.
You know?
He's awesome.
Hey, George Clinton recorded with Britt and Daisy a couple of tracks
a
few years
ago.
That was on some, was that the Musicians from Minneapolis? It was some benefit album, I believe.
I can't remember.
It was a double or triple disc recording. If anyone knows, well, I'll ask Britt later.
Britt.
It was a double or triple disc recording, and it was Smile Raised with George Clinton, and they did two tracks.
Right at their house.
Yeah, and it was and there were like a lot of like, I mean, national and international stars on it. It's like, it's that sort of Duval thing. Like, we, our people just pop up all kinds of places. You never know.
Sure, and people pop up on us.
Yeah.
Because I remember at the Voodoo, when I used to work at the Voodoo, I've taken Chaka Khan to the Voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
Chaka Khan has played drums at the Voodoo while I was singing.
Wow.
Annie DeFranco came to see us at the Voodoo.
Mm.
The drummer from the Deftones came and sat in with me one night at the Voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it was like people were saying that the Voodoo was reminding them of places when I was there at my band Aerial Tribe. That was reminding them of things that they had seen other places. That whole vibration, DJ Therapy was spinning in the back.
Oh, yeah. Soulhead Sundays.
Soulhead Sundays. Therapy in the back, Overstreet. I'm talking about Overstreet. Aerial Tribe up front. You know,
mm-hmm.
And it was just like a match made in heaven. Plus, it actually
Soul
was.
In the front, B-Boys in the back.
Absolutely. And everybody getting along.
Hotties all, everywhere.
Everywhere.
Girls used to like. I remember girls would come there specifically to try and get on stage to, like, sing with you.
Oh, nice to let them.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's one of the great things about
yeah,
you. You're, I mean, I think of you almost like an educator, you know? You're kind of like a teacher in the sense that, you know, you play with all these guys, but a lot of guys you play with are much younger than you.
Mm-hmm.
You play, like, you'll play with Chaka Khan, you'll play with people like this, but you'll play with a rookie. Like,
oh,
you'll let a 16-year-old kid come in and sit in.
Oh, Bert and I were just doing it at this pizza place we were playing at regularly, Tony D's Pizza. He's a guitar player, the son of the owner. He's 14,
mm-hmm.
15. He came and sat in with us every week, and we enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You know? And I saw him get better over the months. Like, you see what I'm saying? I was like, man,
when you're in there,
you're coming along, you know?
When you're in there, you sink or swim, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, Burt Mingill really inspire you to get better if you... Even with singing.
Yeah.
You know, and I appreciate that people enjoy what I do, but I hear people like Burt Mingill
mm-hmm.
and his soulful... He just got like a soulful voice. There's something about it. And he pushed. It's like you got to move to the next level if you're gonna be singing with Bert. You gotta, you know, even go further because I'm one of his biggest fans.
Yes.
You know, if people appreciate me, I'm one of his biggest fans. Sometimes when I don't feel like being at a gig, I'm happy to be there because I actually get to hear him sing and play. And he considers himself a guitar player, so
yes.
He probably gets pissed at me because I'm always calling him a singer because he really wants to be known as a guitar player. But he's got a great voice.
He's fantastic. You know, the one of my favorite songs in recent years, probably a song that you guys don't even like. Like, what was that song? Man From Down Under.
Oh, I love
your cover of Man From Down Under, especially the version that's on the YouTube. That was one of the highlights of the year.
There's a version on YouTube?
Yeah.
I didn't even know.
The version that you guys were here
on? No, I remember filming it. I just didn't know they had put it up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's funny.
I remember I put it up on the Facebook like last summer. I think, was it last summer? Maybe
yeah,
summer.
Yeah, probably last summer.
And, yeah, people were all over
that is funny.
It was,
Oh, my God. We were just being silly. It's fun, though.
It's
Goodwin Cafe is a good place to just express yourself.
Absolutely.
You know? And I want to make mention that it's so funny. I was just telling my buddy Mo, you know Mo Ricks.
Mm-hmm.
I was just telling him the other day. Mo Ricks, by the way, who is a brilliant sound man who has
absolutely
recorded Vibe Element, my first band, who has recorded Club, mm-hmm. who has recorded Shock T Cypher, you know. So anyway, and a good brother in our families. Have been associated before we were even born.
Absolutely. Anvil Audio Crew, Jim
Anvil,
Lurch, Brian Hicks.
The whole
Hicks.
Thing.
Yes.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, I was just telling him the other day, well, I forgot. I was so busy because I didn't want to not acknowledge
well, absolutely.
The work that Mo, I didn't want to just be like, Mo
talking about Goodwin Cafe?
Oh, yeah. This place, This is the first, I was telling Mo the other day, I said, you know, this is the first time that I live with people who are so brilliant with their hands. I said, I live with musicians, and which that's one brilliance. Mm-hmm. You know, all my roommates since I've been home over the last 14 years have generally been musicians. But now I'm living with Overstreet Dukas, who is a visual artist, a brilliant and awesome and innovative visual artist. Mm-hmm. And I'm living with Jason Counter, who is a carpenter. Mm-hmm. And he does fantastic work, you know, in and out of Florida. So, and I said, my God, I said, this is so funny. I was telling Overstreet one day, I told Jason, I said, listen at the setup here. I said, there's a musician, a carpenter, and an artist. I said, only God could have set that up. You know, I said, that sounds very, you know, mm-hmm. like a musician, a carpenter, or an artist. Sounds like something I read in the scriptures, you know. Oh, yeah. But this is the first time that I've worked with people who were so brilliant with their hands. By the way, I can't do anything. I can't build anything. Overstreet can. He can paint. He can build rooms. Oh, yeah. Brother Jason can build houses. He does tile. He does everything, right? This is Bert wanting to come out and get his money. So give him a second.
Absolutely.
B. Diddy.
That's excellent. That's good for me.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool. And Oscar. And let's say a word for Clark Creamer, who was here
Brother
at the Goodwin Cafe for a while.
He is like paste, like glue. He actually brings people together.
He does.
He brings people together. Mm-hmm. There are so many people that are friends now. Like you and I were friends before we knew Clark, but mm-hmm. Overstreet I know through Clark. He showed me a painting one time, and I saw the work, brother said, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And I said, who painted this? He said, my old friend Overstreet. You know Overstreet, right? I was like, no. And then he said, yeah, you know, and he started explaining the science of this painting as much as he could remember that Overstreet told him. And I was like, I've got to meet this person. I said, you actually know the person? Mm. That painted this, you know this. You didn't just buy this, get this as a gift. You know this person. He said, yeah. I said, I gotta meet him. Mm-hmm. It was like a year and a half later when I finally did. It was like I would be somewhere and they say he just left, or you know, we just kept missing each other. It was so strange. And I met Jason through him. Mm-hmm. You know, it's weird. And Goodwin Cafe had just been like, you know, a great meeting place.
Yes.
For people. And you already know you're a part of it. You know,
sure.
You are as much a part of it. I mean, there's caricatures of you in my video.
That's right.
So that's how much down with Goodwin Cafe.
Absolutely.
You are. And we are with Brother Hull.
It's hard to caricature a caricature. That takes a heck of an artist to do that.
So. I love it. Well, you and my band, finally.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a bit about your video work. I recall reading an article in, what was it, I think Arbus Magazine, about some of the video work, touching on some of the video work you've done recently.
Yeah, thanks to Rebecca Miller.
Yes.
Who is a brilliant person, and I'm her guinea pig. She is she's an artist, and she is wanting to do cartoons for educational reasons, mm-hmm. teaching people how to do math, how to speak in Yiddish,
yeah,
you know, all types of different things, right? So she thinks that all of us, including you, like you have more than one character. You're not just in that video, you know. Mm-hmm. There is just a Shelton Hull character created by Rebecca Miller, which looks very much like, you know, Schoolhouse Rock.
Yes, yes.
You know, so, you know, she says, do you mind if I make some cartoons of these songs? And I said, not at all. You know, but it was actually what I wanted. The universe gave me just what I wanted, because I don't really like making videos. I don't like cameras pointing at me and me having to act like I'm talking to or making love to a camera and all that stuff. I'm completely uncomfortable with that. Now, if it was us here at Goodwin Cafe fooling around, then I can do it. We all friends.
Or like taping a live show or something.
But see, that's live. Mm-hmm. But see, it's not live anymore if they ask me to do it again.
Yeah, exactly.
See, that's the part I don't like. You mm-hmm. just catch what you catch it. You know
yes.
what I'm saying? I don't want to do it again. So a video for me is somebody happening to be there with a camera or a crew from a corporation or a company that's been set up there and the camera's already there. But then when you start asking me to do it again, look this way, act a little more this way and all mm-hmm. that, then I am completely uninterested. And I have good friends. One of my close friends is one of the main characters on The Wire. His name is Michael K. Williams. He played Omar.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let me show you something further. Hold on. I'll be right back.
All right.
Before Michael K. Williams was acting, he was dancing for different artists like Crystal Waters and, you know, it was a lot of house music and dance music back at that time and, you know, Robin S. and stuff like that. So we became friends and then we started a group with Jamie Bailey from Black House from yeah. Jacksonville. He used to send me tracks in New York and I was singing with Mariah wow. Carey at this time. He would send me tracks in New York from Jacksonville. I would write lyrics. Michael K. Williams would come and lay like a rap.
Yeah.
Right? And then Jamie would drive up to New York in snow and all kinds of the conditions, right? And we would record. And we had this group called Black House, which is how Jamie's club down here, when he finally started a production company, had a club. It was Black House. It was because of this group with it we had done, me and James Bailey.
What was the group called?
It was called Black House. It was me, James Bailey, and Michael K. Williams. Omar from The Wire, who is doing his thing. I am so proud of him. Oh, yeah. I don't even know what to do. But these are some, you know, little things, you know. This is when, you know, before all of that, you know, these
That's
pictures
amazing.
And stuff like this, you know. And all of us are still friends. I still work with Jamie. Michael still, you know, I know he's on another big show now called, what is this, Atlantic City thing?
Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, yeah, he's on that show now.
Oh, yeah.
So he's just doing his thing. I'm so proud of him. Hey. Mm-hmm.
We'll pause again.
Pause.
And we're back with Patrick Evan.
And you know, in talking about people who were doing things different before I met them, like when I met you, I used to see you in San Marco doing poetry.
That's right.
At, what was the name of that club?
That was...
It was on King Street, I think.
Yeah. I have no idea.
I can't remember.
It's over by where Eclipse is now.
In San Marco.
Indo-Exo.
It was Locals, I think, the bar that's... No,
yes.
I mean, the bar that's Locals, that's what it was.
Yeah, I cannot remember...
I can't remember the name of it.
Me and... I started going out there with G. Jerome Jones and Alan Justice.
Oh, my God.
Al Letson, you know, all those guys were, like, you know, way out there. I was, like, young at the time. I remember once... I almost got my ass kicked because I started talking shit about Reverend R.J. Washington, and there were like R.J. Washington fans in there, and I don't know all the random things you can to get heat for, but yeah, thankfully I had some people to kind of bail me out. Yes.
Do you still do poetry from time to time?
No, I have not written an actual poem in probably 5 years. I think about it sometimes, but I don't know, writing, it's different disciplines. Like my mind doesn't think in terms of poetry. You know, I could certainly, if I want to like just do some poetry, I could sit down and do it, but it's never something that spontaneously comes to mind.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Yeah. Someday I'll put out a book of the poetry I have written, and people will then understand why I don't do any more.
Why, is it dark?
No, it's fine. It's just, I used to write poems about, like, girls I had crushes on and
stuff like
that. Oh,
yeah, I write
songs
like that.
Because that's really what poetry is for to me.
Yeah. Do you always tell them? Like, do you always say, I wrote this poem about you? Because sometimes I'm singing songs that
they never know.
I don't say nothing to, that's just my own little private party. So you don't tell them always either?
They know. The more I like a girl, the less I tell her. I'm not sure why, but
they want the total opposite of that. You know?
I know. I'm contrarian. I don't.
Hey, and by the way, I wanted to ask you something. And this is all so funny. I know we're doing an interview, but there's a couple of things I just been wanting to talk to you
Please
about.
Do.
Anyway,
yeah.
I was in the library one day, and I was on. I think it was the third or fourth floor. Anyway, there was an area where you can go. There were all these other, like, records. You have to sign in to get to this area, right?
Yeah.
And so they were talking about, it was some historical things about Jacksonville from, like, in the, like, 30s or 40s.
Yeah.
Did you know about the black wrestling? that they used to have downtown, every like once a week. It was all it was a night that was mainly it would be black people there and black wrestlers.
I had no idea.
You have got to check.
I knew they had a lot.
Thinking about you ever since I saw this.
I knew they had a lot of wrestling in town, but I didn't know they had something specifically catering to black people. I wonder where they might have been holding that at. So there's records
and
of that.
And just for the listener, it's not just because you're black that I want you to see this. It's because I know you are a huge wrestling fan. That's why I'm telling you this.
So that stuff is up in the genealogy department.
Absolutely. And it is fantastic. You will love it. Let me get the door for the brother.
We're going to take a quick break, ladies and gentlemen. Bert Minji and Oscar Barnett are on their way up here. Perhaps we will join them in on this and be right back.